Before the Rings of Power, there were the Silmarils. Before Sauron, there was his master Morgoth. Before Aragorn and Arwen, there was Beren and Lúthien. Join us as we explore Tolkien and all the ages of Middle-earth with your hosts from theonering.com, Jonathan Watson and Michael Grumbine.
Let me start off by apologizing for my voice. I have been a little bit under the weather, so we'll need to bear through this whole episode. Hopefully I can edit out any coughs or sniffles or loogies that end up coming out during this episode.
I'm glad you were so specific about the various things.
You know,
let me apologize for the fact that this is not actually an Exploring Tolkien episode.
What?
As I mentioned to Jonathan before, this is an Exploring Watson episode.
Well, I mean, maybe
an Exploring Watson, Exploring Tolkien episode.
So what we're doing in this episode is I spent the last week kind of thinking about what would the story look like. And for me, the easiest way to do it is, okay, if this were, particularly because we looked at the Rings of Power and how screwed up that was, if this were a show on television, a true second age show that they put on TV, what would it look like? What would each season kind of entail? Who would the primary characters be? How would we work it out? And particularly in this story, how would it end? And how would we actually make it, give it some sort of, like, I don't want to end just on a downer. I want to actually end with a little bit of hope at the end of this here. So that was where I kind of settled, and we'll get to that as we go through this. So this is looking at not the Mariner's Wife now. This story is just the Mariner. Not the rhyme of the Ancient Mariner with anything like albatrosses, but just the Mariner. So this is all about Eldarion. So it starts and ends with Eldarion, and everything in between. Now, we don't end at Eldarion's death because that's not where that's not where I decided. Because there's a lot that happens there you don't really know about at all. Like I didn't want to do what the Rings of Power did, which is we're going to make crap up the whole time. We're just going to stuff things together. I tried really hard to keep with the years, the characters, you know, and there's a little bit of leeway, maybe in some motivations, because we don't get into we get the bell curve ends of the characters, the worst and the best, and we don't know. Sometimes there's a little bit of middle ground where you can find where they're at war with each other, which makes great characters. Like I always go back to a great character like I don't know if you ever watched Deep Space Nine, but Garak in Deep Space Nine, he was such a wonderful character because he had this horrible side, which was his history, and then it seemed like he was trying to do good, and he did good things. And anyway, those are the kinds of characters that make it interesting. I think
they would have to those characters. He would slip back. Yep. Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. So, just so our viewers understand, I have not heard this story yet. I'm here
not.
Now for the first.
I have not read anything.
Time.
So and I will
with
say,
you, my reactions will be fresh.
The first four seasons are essentially what we already have, but so this is like an entire show. This is not just what happens after. That was unfinished. This is the entire thing because we have to set up some of the stuff that is unfinished earlier in the discussion. All right, so that's a big setup. Sorry, everybody, for the long winded.
No, but we should also mention that we're going to break it into seasons. You're going to talk about them mm-hmm. season by season. I'll give reactions mm-hmm. as mm-hmm. they come to me, and then we'll move through. And if we don't make it through all six, is it six seasons? Is that right?
Yeah, six. Yep, six seasons is what I have it at.
And if we won't make it through all six seasons, we might have to break this up, but let's see how far we can get. Yeah. And we look forward to the comments in the YouTubes and other places.
And in the Discords, which you can go to, just click the become a member link down below. Like there's, you can become a member as is Michael's wont to say, you're a freeloader, but you can still join us in the Discord chat. You just don't get everything that
we love freeloaders
that comes with our members. Right. But we love our members more. Just because they're special. And we have good conversations. Man, we get there's some deep stuff going on right now, even with some of the freeloaders. We love you guys. But if you want to become a member, we've gotten more this month than ever in any of our history. So, which I was telling Michael earlier, this means that you do clickbaity Rings of Power videos, and then you go hardcore on the podcast, and the cream of the crop of the listeners rises to the top, and they become the members. It's a wonderful thing.
It's a very distinct process.
It's my idea that, like, you know, I hated the Lord of the Rings films when it came out, but it brought people to Tolkien, and that was a good thing. I hate the Rings of Power when it comes up, but man, if we can somehow find that silver lining and get people deep into Tolkien based on that, that's worth it to me right now. not Rings of Power.
Totally agree.
Doing these clickbaity videos is good. So anyway, if you want to become a member, just like Harrison, Adam, Lynn, and Rich, who go above and beyond and are our sponsors, you can go to theoneweek.com/member, become a member. We are going to be talking a little bit more about my thoughts on here, and we have a couple questions from some folks regarding how Erendis reacted to Ankali May. She said, "I'll love you as long as you don't leave me." That sort of a thing. So there's a deeper question on that. We'll get into that.
Conditional love. It's the best kind.
And I'd like to hear what we'll leave. Maybe we'll leave some harsh details that Michael's going to leave out from his reaction to my overview of this 6-season show into our extended episode 2. So join us there, theonering.com/member. Oh, and guys, we're going to have a special little thing we haven't done in a while at the end of the show too. So stay tuned for that. Something that's worth listening to. It's a little, all right,
everybody. Okay. That's a fun teaser.
Yeah. So, again, so 6 seasons, if this were a show on television that, they don't have to spend $1 billion for, they could do this for far less. And that's because we're not being stupid and including tons of stuff that the Rings of Power does and squashing everything together. So season one, year 700, to 740. 700 is the year that Aldarion is born. And 740 is the year that Tar-Meneldur becomes the king. And it's also the year, essentially, that it's 739 is when Aldarion returns from his from his trip with Vayontur, bearing gifts from Gil-galad. So here, I'm going to read through this and stop me if you need to, Michael. All right, so the show begins with a man jumping off a boat running inland. He reaches a home and is stopped by a royally dressed man of some sort. They discuss how he's not exactly welcome there. And right now, this scene kind of establishes that Vayontur isn't exactly liked by Meneldor. And because, you know, he's upset, he still thinks that going overseas is not a good idea, that... Like, he's kind of a malcontent. That's how Meneldor sees him. But it's where he's running to is the birth of Aldarion, because he sees Aldarion as the heir. It's his grandson, right? Grandson? Yeah. I always think he's his son. Mm-hmm. And so he goes there and he calls him his little mariner, right? Because he has hope for him to be something more than just a king. So that's where it starts. And the point of the season now is to get to know Aldarion's youth, his impulsiveness, how... he desires to travel afar, and we see, you know, his love of the sea and his reckless relationships already now. Like, he has a hard time separating his loves. He has that passion for the sea, but when it comes to friendships like that, those always seem to come secondary to his goals for that. And these relationships that he establishes, even some of the reckless ones, they are the relationships that will lead to the Guild of Venturers. So we'll have some through lines of characters there in this Guild of Venturers that he starts here early, and they eventually get into that. And as he goes over to Middle-earth with Vayontur on Numeramar, again, we have to have the Oyo-Lai-Re on here. So
we're getting better at it. We really are.
We're going to make sure that that's kind of featured still, because that's important as the seasons progress. He goes over to Middle-earth, and he meets some of these, I don't know if they're noblemen, but they're Middle-earth men who have established cities. So there's a respect there. They have some, you know, he finds some folks who he has some things in common with, whether it's like his visions for the future for greater lands and greater ships. He learns from them, but they mostly learn from him. And in his time, he actually fights battles with them against a menace in the east of some sort. But they're just skirmishes, nothing great.
Okay, so this is during season one, middle to end of season
middle
one?
To end, yeah, somewhere around there.
Okay, and have you thought about what's the disparity going to be between the Numenoreans, essentially, and the men that he's with at that point?
Disparity in the sense of, like, technology or
right, so you brought out that he's going to be... You know, there's things they learn from him more than what he learns from them.
Well, and
I presume what he learns from them, because we have it referenced later on in the story, that he starts to learn their languages. That's first.
Their language, the lay of the land, some of, you know, the important places they're in. He hears of the elves. He hasn't really met them yet. And probably at this point, go ahead.
I was going to say, he's probably given Aldarion's nature, he probably will want to be highly interested in, especially the coastline. He wants to know where can he further travel on the sea,
right?
But also, so and then they're learning from him. Are these like tribesmen level, or this what kind of culture are we talking about here? Because Tolkien's big on culture.
Well, you're going deeper into this than I, okay. than I like, but yes, there is some established hierarchical communities here, and so what it does is that we see who are the leaders of those communities. I don't know exactly what that looks like at this point, but right. you know, they're the men that did not fight in the battle against Morgoth. They're the men that stayed, but yet they're noble in their own way, and so. You know, and so what I want is I want there to be a couple characters that that Aldarion does befriend. He finds value in their relationship. They're the ones that he goes hunting with. They're the ones that he fights a battle with. They're the ones that might introduce him to an elf, right? This might be the first time he meets an elf somewhere around that area, who's been scouting out Eriador, because this is right before they start building Ostenethel. I think that's 750 is when that... Yes, that's when the construction begins of Ostenethel. All right, so he returns from this voyage, and we again establish that Meneldor hates how much Aldarion loves the sea. And he makes this point because he knows that, you know, a descendant of Elros needs to spend his time here, that the future of Numenor is dependent on the scepter being passed to the son, because it is his son, because it is the land of gift. It is the land that was born out of it, you know, they're special, they're descendants of Elros. They were given this by the Valar. And Numenor is important, and he finds that because Aldarion is spending so much time overseas, he understands that he doesn't value Numenor like Meneldor values Numenor.
Right, and that'll be interesting to explore, because I like where you're going there, because I've always thought that it would be fun to essentially, instead of just having the picture of Aldarion and Arrendis and their ultimately broken relationship, and the flaws that become evident in each of them. Mm-hmm. Also then seeing, though, the distinction between the Meneldor-focused view of Numenor versus the Aldarion-focused view of Numenor.
Yes.
Because Meneldor is going to look at what Aldarion is doing, and he thinks of it as an abdication of responsibility. You're not paying attention to Numenor.
Exactly.
Aldarion, though, from the hints that we have from Arrendis's mother's statements about... what Aldarion seems like, and the fact that he's driven by something, in other words, and then his dreams and things like that, we can see that Aldarion won't even see necessarily that he's abandoning any responsibilities. He might even have a vision for Numenor, which is something more and greater, and not just focused on the land of the gift, but on its influence and expanding outwards, its greatness, its ability to, you know, help the elves ultimately, but especially, you know, spread the influence of his people and become something great. And that's not an abandonment in his own mind. That's not an abandonment of his duty to Numenor.
Right. Yeah. Agreed.
Now that's a long-term arc. I'm not talking about like all that in season one.
That's actually very important. The whole idea of how Meneldor views Numenor. And how Aldarion responds to that as we go through these seasons. Okay, so he goes back overseas. And this point, he goes back to Middle-earth to establish relationships with some of the elves. And it's at this point that he meets Círdan. He either meets Gil-galad or meets heralds of Gil-galad. And so he spends his time there. Círdan becomes like a second father to him, because Círdan appreciates his desire of the sea and his shipbuilding. And so there's a stronger relationship that they have. In that time there with Círdan at the Grey Havens, he catches wind of some of these disquieting rumors of the Men of the East. And so that's tough for him, because he knows some of these Men of the East, and yet the elves are talking about them in some negative terms. And so that brings a lot of conflict into him about who he's going to trust, and should he trust the men, or are the elves just that distrustful of everyone? So I kind of want to start the process there of like introducing a little bit of the evil of the East. I haven't decided. There might need to be some more like distinct type of battles in here, but I can't get into those details there. All right. So the season ends with his return, bringing gifts from the Grey Havens. And though Meneldor disdains these gifts, it's not like there's a pure anger on it, right? Is he still his son? And he just, you know, his goal is he just wants Aldarion to stay. So Aldarion stays and he sees his father take the scepter, but things kind of descend because he doesn't want to be on land anymore. And after an argument, right after he takes a scepter, he leaves. He just leaves, like it's in the middle of the celebration. He just leaves and decides, at some point during that celebration, like he leaves, he heads back to his ship. He starts heading back to his ship.
Does he take the scepter with him?
He does not take the scepter with him. No, but I thought it might be a good scene to end on with him just looking at a tree, start chopping it down, start the process, man. I'm not sure what that would exactly look like, but I want him to start looking at things as like, I'm here to build a fleet. I'm here to build out our seafaring ways.
There's some powerful ways you could do that visually. That's pretty cool. I won't go into detail because this is exploring Watson, not exploring Grapevine. but I like that. That's really good. So did I catch it that there's going to be no mention of Arrendis in this first season?
No, Arrendis is not even born yet.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah. Yes.
All right, season two. That's why it's the Mariner. It's not just doing it. So what you'll see is as I go through this here, I don't spend a lot of time on scenes that Tolkien wrote because I just kind of mention them and I say like, we have this scene because Tolkien wrote it and it'll be in here. And so it might feel like I'm not concentrating a lot of time on Arrendis, but that's because there's so much in the story that's already there that I figure will be in the story at some point in their relationship.
Sure. Yeah. Presumption, unlike Rings of Power, is that everything that was in Tolkien is written is going to be in the story.
That's right. Absolutely.
And then although there might be some different emphases and like, for example, your building up of Círdan as a kind of foster father, like with the conflict with his own father, the conflict of their vision for Numenor.
Yeah.
What's right now just seeds of Aldarion's vision, but
yeah,
there, you know, he's easily gloms on to, you know, the greatest shipbuilder in Middle Earth as a father figure.
Yeah, exactly. I like that. There's some more struggle with him. And it shows him as how he would look at a father in a respectful way. And it hurts us to see him then react to Meneldur in such a negative way in that way too. All right. So season two, years 740 to 806. So the season starts with a view of the reason I always say like, I always have a vision of like, what's the first scene that we're going to look at? Because that's kind of the spring point to how my mind works and like everything goes from there. So the season starts with a shot of an expansive forest, and then a large portion of it is just cut down. And it's clear that the wood is being taken and being built to build the greater ships than the Numeramar.
I like that. You start with a leveled forest.
Yeah, exactly. And it's scarring. It's damaging to the eyes. Right? It doesn't look nice like the rest of Numenor. So we don't even like it when we see it. But it establishes, of course, that Aldarion is now taking huge steps that are leaving their mark on the land in order to build these ships. Let me make sure I get this date right. So in, what is it, 740, right? So at this point we see, we've established a relationship with the elves. So we're actually going to leave Numenor and we're going to go straight into Eriador in Middle Earth where they're building Ostenethel. And so we spend some time with them. We see them as they are fighting some of these wild men and even maybe a troll or two. Like there's like the greater Tolkien legendarium characters might appear a little bit, not Balrogs, not Mithril, but something like that. Not orcs.
Can we have, I got this cool idea. Can we have like this scene where we have Galadriel killing an ice troll? Is that, is that possible?
It might have to be a mountain troll, but sure.
All right, mountain troll. Yeah.
So it's at this point that we see, like, with the skirmishes that they're having, they decide to start building Ostenethel in Eregion. We probably meet in some way Galadriel, Celeborn, and Celebrimbor, and also they start building the road between Khazad-dûm and Ostenethel and Eriador, essentially. And so there's a relationship that's starting to get built between Narvi and Celebrimbor. Narvi, of course, the dwarven smith. Smith, is that what we call him, I guess?
Sure.
And Celebrimbor, the greatest elven smith after Feanor. So we established some of that.
Narvi, for those of you that don't know, is the one that built much of Khazad-dûm's infrastructure, including the doors. He appears as an inscription on the doors of Durin that the company goes through at the Fellowship of the Ring, near the end of the Fellowship of the Ring, when they enter Moria and get attacked by the Watcher in the Water. So the doors were there, carved by Narvi, and Celebrimbor also has his inscription there.
All right. Thank you for clearing that up, because sometimes I just assume everybody remembers that. But yes, that is very true.
We got all kinds of audience, man.
That's right. All right. So at the same time, while the elves are building Osnethal, we see that Aldarion is starting to establish the Guild Adventurers with some of those characters we met from the last season, much to the chagrin of his father, because he feels, again, like he's abandoning his role as, you know, the heir to Elros and what he needs to be doing as a future leader of Numenor. So the guild, though, it's not there as just a foil to Meneldur. They are actually there. They're establishing better seafaring ways. So I'm not sure what the scenes would look like, but we see them sailing around the island. We see them creating and establishing things around Numenor that actually improve their seafaring ways. They understand how to better, you know, take their ships overseas. Veontur is proud of them. He actually doesn't dislike the guild adventurers. He's still totally fine, okay with them. And at this point, we see Aldarion also build a Ambar. And refused to stay in Armenelos. So he's not like, it's a slap in the face of Meneldor. Like, he's really pushing back and saying, like, look, I don't even really want to be the heir. Like, it doesn't matter a whole lot to me at this point, because, you know, guess what? I see what's going on with all the elves. And so as an audience, we're also sort of torn, because we know that there's bad stuff going on in Middle Earth and the elves are under assault in some ways, and it's growing. But we also see that he has a relationship to be on Numenor, or he has a responsibility to be on Numenor from Meneldor. So, but Ambor is kind of his way of like,
how heavily do you want to, are you going to lean into, how much does, well, let me ask it this way. Aldarion's motivation to be on the sea at this point, is he looking at it as the future of Numenor is on the sea, or is it a personal thing at this rate where he's not thinking of it as a king? He's just sort of,
I think
he wants to be on the sea.
It's still mostly personal, but he's given good reasons now for it. Hmm. And I think he uses that. But yes, it's still that longing, that fever, that heat, that dream. It still drives him, or how do they say it? Does it chase him? I think Tolkien wrote it. Dream chases him. And so that dream chases him. But where is it chasing him to? Well, it's kind of chasing him to the elves and what they're doing. But it's the dream that drives him. Okay, so Aldarion, at this point, after building Ambor and more ships, he returns to Middle Earth, sees the construction of Osnethal, meets with the elves, and is inspired to actually build Vinyalande on the shores, because that's where he wants to build his stronghold. He sees what happens there. They're building a stronghold. He needs to build his own. But these noblemen friends that he's made, who are now actually, you know, they're growing older faster. It's been like 40 years since he first met them. So the ones that were 20 are now 60, essentially. And so their aging is more like ours. It's not as, you know, maybe it's a little bit longer, but they don't live 300-400 years like the early kings of Numenor do.
And this, you could actually use this to show like an advancement in Aldarion's thought, where he comes to this realization, oh, they're not even as long, like the line of Elros is super long lived, even compared to other folks on Numenor, but these people are short-lived compared to even the lesser. Right. So he can start putting the pieces together. Oh, I'm going to have to actually establish a king, an outpost, a settlement. If there's going to be any fruit born from this interaction, it's going to have to come from me and my kin, my ventures, my murder hobo friends.
They are warning him, like, don't build that stronghold here. Not a good idea. And they're a little cagey about why.
Oh, the men are? The tribesmen?
The tribesmen, the local community men, whatever you want to call them. Okay. Should have come up with a better name. But they're warning him, and they're not being very specific. You know, they say be careful of the sea, because we hear a lot in the future, if you've read this here, that we know the sea destroys it. But it does mention that there were also men who helped in its sacking. So they warn him not to, and he realizes there's, again, just like the elves in the last season with Círdan hearing about the men in the east, he realizes there's more at work than just some bad guys locally. Particularly with how difficult the construction is going, right? There's something greater at play.
Yep.
Okay.
Now, where are you going to go with that? Sorry to pause it for a second, because what I'm juxtaposing against from a critique perspective, or maybe I should save this. I'm going to save it. I'm going to save it for our members.
Save
Sorry, freeloaders. Join us if you want to hear.
That's good. Yeah. And remember, this is like, this is draft one. This is like 2,500 words. It's like five single spaced pages. So just remember, like, I haven't really gone through this and said like, okay, we got to have to, you know, draw the little lines between things and all that sort of stuff. So.
Honestly, Jonathan, this would be an awesome, you know, what I like about the filling out of this unfinished tale is that it is, this tale has real definition. Unlike the Rings of Power, it's like, let's remake the second age.
Everything. Yeah. And it's
everything.
And we clearly know who the main characters are. And we establish a couple early, and then we add a few more as the seasons progress. We don't try and create four different storylines in the first episode. And that's, I think,
right, which is why I have to speak not of the Rings of Power, but of another upcoming project. Why I have some hope, perhaps unfounded, for the War of the Rohirrim, because it's picked a specific tale to tell. And they can still warp that tale badly, but at least they aren't trying to bite off like a whole age and write in the you know, the starting points of Maiar and all the and Middle Earth and all this stuff.
There was a popular book that came out some time ago called Boundaries, which I think that the Rings of Power writers should have read before.
I know that. I know that
before, before going in. All right, so Aldarion returns. He leaves some men there to still work on Vinilande, and he returns. And the strife between him and Melindor has not improved. In fact, it's just growing. But we get a better shot. We get a better knowledge of his mother, Almarion, at this point, as she tries to mediate the issue. She loves her son, that's clear. And he has an affection for her. But it's becoming clear to Melindor that Aldarion now, because he hears about Vinilande, is becoming less and less tied to Numenor. And that concerns him. Because what will happen if the true king of Numenor, like the true king of the line of Elros, doesn't sit the throne? Like, what? That's a bad deal. This was given to Elros. This is the land of gift that was given to him, essentially, as the one who chose to be a man. So, he commands him to stay in Numenor at this point, and he proclaims him the king's heir, hoping that that changes things. Right. And it's at this point that we meet Arrendis. And it's clear that Almarion has more of an eye for Arrendis because of her relationship with her, and she appreciates her and she likes her. But Melindor realizes, oh, she's not of the line of Elros. This is a problem. This is not good. And so, but he, you know, he can't convince his wife differently. So he decides to let it sit on the back burner, thinking it's not going to work out. So at this point, Almarion is trying to work Arrendis and Aldarion together. And they don't really have much, like, it's not like there's no romantic relationship at this point. But the season ends with the scene of Aldarion leaving to go back to Numenor in the year 806. This is right before his 7-year voyage. And that this is admits to himself that he does have eyes for Arrendis. This is the line from the story that says, "There are fairer things in our Menelaus than a man could find elsewhere, even the lands of the Eldar." And Almarion took that in her last conversation with him to be him referring to Arrendis. So we end with him leaving, because either he's going to be chopping trees down at the end of a season or leaving, as we find out from him. But we see that there's now an attraction between the two. Arrendis, we don't know much about her, but she's lovely. She's affectionate in her own way. She's part of the royal house, but we know that Melindor is not a big fan. At this point, he's not.
How many episodes do you think? Is this like a short, like a, this like British short, like 4 episodes per season? Is this, or 6 or 8 or
6 to 10, probably, depending on what it needs. And it is unique in the sense, like, a lot of time passes in some of these here. And I don't know how much you'd have to actually like try to say this is 20 years later, because that might not be helpful.
The nice thing is the people that are in the story, except, you know, some of the characters from some of the tribesmen from Middle Earth, don't age visibly very much.
Yeah.
So you can have these times passing and, you know, just have a small amount of aging happening, which can be pulled off.
Yeah. Particularly now, not until we get to, you know, like season 6, where we're hitting year, what, like 930. So that's, you know, that's almost 200 years after Aldarion's born. So at that point he's in his hard throws of middle age, and maybe a little bit of gray is shown and things like that. All right, season 3. I don't know if we'll get through seasons 5 and 6 here, guys. Season 3, 7 years later, Aldarion returns to Numenor. So actually, this season begins, we kind of say he's been gone for 7 years, things have happened, but we're just going to go ahead and say, like, we're not even going to get into that whole 7-year voyage. There's not a whole lot of detail in Tolkien's book, so why make a bunch of stuff up? He returns to Numenor. He's a little bit more haggard. Building Vinyalanda hasn't been easy on him, we can tell. And Melador is still unhappy, even though Aldarion speaks of the elves and a sense of growing greater evil with a difficulty in establishing Vinyalanda. So as Melador still speaks to him of the throne and how important it is, and it's clear that the reservations he had about Arendis have been worn down by Almarion. And it's at this point that Almarion has kind of established, like, she gets them to meet together. So they meet relatively often, Andarion and Arendis. And this softens the king even more as he sees a growing relationship, because you know how much he's hated him and his passion for the sea. So having Aldarion actually see him have some passion for something else other than the sea is actually something that is important to him. He can't shake the sense of disquiet, though, that she's not of the line of Elros, that she's different. She's not.
But the he here is Meneldor, right?
The he here is Meneldor. Meneldor can't shake that disquiet that he has.
Okay.
At this point in their relationship, the way I put it is, as you would like me to put it, Aldarion is still building ships and leaving her. So it's a tough relationship in some ways. And he's building Palaran. And it's at this point that he immediately leaves. He's like, I'm ready to go, because their relationship is strongish, but it's not official when it comes to like being a betrothal, right? So right. Aldarion leaves in 816 to go on his 4-year voyage. And there you can see that he regrets it a little bit, because he will be leaving Arendis for a while.
Was this the one where she comes and puts the oil aire
yes.
on the ship?
No, that's the next one.
Okay.
That's the
next Sorry, one. I get yeah. lost. There's a no, lot.
I know there's a lot
there's
of
a lot of leaving that I he think, does.
In fact, there's at one point I'm just kind of ignoring one of the voyages he has, because it's a lot of going back and forth, and I feel like you have to kind of leave a little bit of that out. But I'd rather leave a little bit out than add my own stuff in. Okay, so he heads back to Middle-earth. He continues to establish Vinyalanda with more help of his men that he's brought with the other ones that were there, but they haven't had an easy time. And at the same time, these tribesmen, he can see them cooling even further to him. Those that he knew before are now either old or dead. Their descendants, though they have some respect for him, he can tell it's only because of tradition. There is no more like, there is, they do not have a mutual respect because of who they are. They're like, oh, this is the guy that my father hunted with,
spoke about,
and yeah. spoke well about and had a great relationship with, and so we still respect him, but they are certainly cooling to him. And there are elves now who are also visiting Vinyalanda from Ostenethel as well, seeing it and trying to say, like, okay, we definitely need to keep this going. And we see that the elves they know more than they're letting on, and they don't want to play their hand with Aldarion yet and mention Sauron, even though they suspect that it's Sauron there. I'm not sure how much of the audience that knows, but we want to keep Aldarion as like, there's a greater evil afoot, and Aldarion can kind of see it. But we might see that there are more skirmishes, and these skirmishes are more directed, and maybe there's something coming from the sea to try and attack Vinyalanda that's a little bit more, that is organized far better than it ever has been in the past. And that kind of makes him wonder, because these are still just tribesmen. Why would these tribesmen be more, why would they really want to attack him that much?
Right. And I don't think you can have a whole series of warnings over a couple seasons from these tribesmen of different kinds without Aldarion digging in more. Because remember, he's spending years here. So you've got to lock it in somehow. You got to give it more, a little more, where he is going to have to become aware that there's a force, a presence, some great king far in the, in lands that's encroaching upon the tribesmen's land, something of that order. The elves, of course, suspect something more, but Aldarion just knows it to be, some growing power of some type.
Threatening. Later in the season, we'll get into that. So he returns then back to Numenor to a cold father, again, because he's been gone longer than originally intended. And his relationship with his father is emblematic of how he feels about the land, right? It is irksome. The land is irksome, like his father is irksome to him. He just doesn't want to be there or spend time with it. He sees Arendis briefly, but then he just decides to leave again. He's done. he's out. And so, right, he leaves. What is it? He leaves with his seven ships, a fleet of seven ships, and it's at this point that Arendi smuggles in the Oyo Laire, and the king is furious. The guild house is shut. The shipyards are closed. It looks like Numenor is not going
to be. Was that the one? Because he forbade him to go at that.
Yes, point, right? He forbade him go, and in defiance of those orders, he went.
Yep.
And so at this point, I wrote, like, there's a 5-year voyage he takes, and then right after that, there's a 14-year voyage he takes. So I might just combine those two into one voyage so we can spend a little more time in that.
You can even have it be technically correct to Tolkien by having him return to a different port on Numenor and then leave again immediately, like outfit and refit.
That's true.
And leave.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
anyway. And it's at this time that we spend more time with Arendi. She despairs for his return, and she's still. She's still in Armenelos, and it's at this point that she gets to know Saranto. Saranto is about her age, but he's an elf of the line of Elros. He's, I believe, the cousin, right? Aldarion's cousin or nephew?
Cousin, yes. I think he's cousin.
Yeah. And though, you know, he's someone who clearly wants what's best for Numenor, he's in the line of Meneldor in that way, like not line, like airline, but his approach to Numenor is sort of similar to how Meneldor does. Though it's clear he also has some ambitions of his own. It's at this point also that, you know, she gets to know Saranto. She doesn't have a great relationship with him. It's courteous. But he's part of the royal house there. And so at this point, her relationship, this relationship is established and isn't great, her relationship with Amarion worsens. And so she just decides to leave for her own kindred in the Westlands. Like, Aldarion isn't there holding her down. She's not doing great with Almarion anymore. And this upsets Meneldor because she's not committed again to the throne, right? He sees her as, originally he saw her as maybe she would temper Aldarion's needs of the sea, but that hasn't worn out. And so he's still very, not cold to her, but distant. And it's not helping at this point. Aldarion continues to build up Vinyalande at this point, and he knows that evil is afoot. These old tribesmen that he befriended before, their children have turned against him at this point. And this is when he hears of the Great King of the East. You were mentioning that earlier. We need something that's more defined. And this Great King of the East has begun to lead them, right? He's actually like structuring society in a way around these people and trying to like pull them together in order to create a force of some sort. And the word that he hears, that Aldarion hears, is he will set them free of the Numenoreans. Because the Numenoreans are kind of breathing down their back. They're all over them. They've been cutting down their trees. They've been plundering some of their stuff. The elves haven't really done a whole lot, but Bandy elves are helping them. And so these noblemen have been poisoned, or their poison has been made more acute by the words of this great king of the East.
I like it. Yeah. Especially you can lean into the fact that the rumor is they aren't even real men. They could be deceivers because they never seem to age. So they're kind of elves. So, you know, we distinguish them as men from elves, but to the viewpoint of the tribesmen, they're just like these unchanging beings that show up. It's a little suspicious. They're not normal.
Yeah.
They come from the sea. Who knows where?
So he leaves, he goes south. At this point, we hear that Aldarion and Tolkien wrote, he actually goes further south and east along the coast of Middle-earth. And it's at this point he goes there to try and find out what's going on. But it's during this time that he's gone that Vinyalande is overthrown by the great seas and plundered by hostile men. Or so he imagines, because he can't believe that these men would completely attempt to overthrow the entire stronghold. That was surprising to him, that these men were able to do it, that Vinyalande is relatively completely destroyed. And so he heads back to Numenor. And he seeks out Arendis, and they are reintroduced, and he sees her with a bright jewel at her throat as they're like riding in the woods. He sees her off in the distance, and their courtship blooms in full at this point, right? He's down in a way because of what happened with his attempted stronghold at Vinyalande, right? He's not happy. And so this brings him a little bit of joy outside of all the negativity that has been happening in Middle Earth to him right now. Friends are gone. His stronghold is gone. What's the one thing that's left? Well, it was the love he had for Arendis.
Can I suggest that you have as part of the episode then, or the season rather, you actually insert stories. I have some things in mind, but you, there are plenty of ways to do it. But the finding of the gem, make it something.
Oh, where, I like that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And maybe he gets it from the east, from his journeys along the coast somewhere. And some exotic kingdom, small kingdom that's been overrun or has been overrun by this king of the east. And he somehow gets this as a gift or spoils of war or whatever you want to do. But he, this is a, basically what you're doing is you're making it a treasure that he brings back for, and then gives it as a gift of love. And, and you know, it's
to a like that. I like that. Yeah. Yeah. So that, yeah, that ties it together well. So he woos her in earnest, and despite his dislike of the land and her dislike of the sea, they made it's made clear in the final scene of the season that where she says, "I will not share my husband with a lady Uinen." He tells her about the diamond. I think you set it too high, for it is dimmed by the light of your eyes. The season closes. He loves go. He leaves go. He leaves to go back on his voyage, back to Middle Earth once again. And it's at this point that we see Saranto trying to comfort Arendis. And how he's trying to weasel his way. Weasel is not the right word. I don't want him to come across as a Grima type character, as like this sort of like smart.
No, but he should come across as a rival.
Yes, as a rival. So,
and by the way, I just looked it up. He is Aldarion's nephew, not his cousin. But that doesn't matter because they're so long lived.
I know. It
doesn't
matter. Yeah. All right. That is season three. We're halfway through. 40 minutes in. Shall we keep going? Season four.
Let's see. Well, this is a good halfway point.
It is.
So we can stop here and do our members block sort of thing.
Let's do that. All right. So season four begins with year 861. That is, we'll go get into that. So 861, and you can see like in how some of these scenes here, we're trying to establish some of these characters like Saranto. Tolkien doesn't tell us much about Saranto at all, but I really like the idea of Saranto being a foil, being a rival, like you said, to them that needs to be established on Numenor, or else Numenor doesn't really have a whole lot of reason for being there. What's important about the line of Elros, right? Because he is of the line of Elros. And now we know that Melindor, like, so there's some sort of like, we can build even more between Melindor and Saranto and find some things in there that add the political intrigue that's necessary.
Right. So, you know, since I think it's, Ilenel.
Yeah, I know who you mean.
the Tara Aldarion's sister.
Yeah.
And you know, you can include his sister and her son as part of from the beginning, even when we're first introduced to the idea of Tar Meneldor not being happy with Aldarion's behavior. That can be expressed to his. You know, to his daughter, and and Saranto can be around because this is a family situation, right? It's in private; it's not publicly taking him down, but it's he's complaining in private, or he's, you know, making his feelings known that on whatever umpteenth time Aldarion has taken off for the ocean for, and you can introduce that whole Saranto understanding that this is, you know, in his grandfather's eyes, this is you know, that Aldarion's not behaving the way king should, and therefore getting what a king should behave like, and so then you get the natural rival. I really like that you're leaning into that. I also want to point out that in order to fill out seasons, I know you're sketching a skeleton now,
yeah
as you go into the meat, we're gonna, you know, you'd have to establish a number of characters. As much as possible, we should use the characters from Tolkien, but there's going to have to be other characters in this. For example, like, I see it'd be completely reasonable for there to be a couple of major characters that are from the Guild of Venturers.
I was just going to say the same thing. Absolutely. 100%. Yeah.
Through all his adventures, I can see like a line of tribesmen, like with the grandfather or great grandfather being the first one he meets. And then each time he goes back, it's the next generation that he meets. And, you know, one of the last of them that could be even faithful to the Numenoreans dying Vinyalandre is overrun, you know, dying, like as Aldarion, we're cutting from Aldarion's view, as Aldarion's already set sail, and then the Vinyalandre comes under attack, and, you know, he can die courageously in battle defending Vinyalandre or something. But anyway, yeah, there's a lot of room. You're going to have to fill in other characters, but I love the skeleton so far.
Is there anything like you think I got wrong? Like they would be like, I would have changed this here. Just curious, like, because
You're telling me skeleton view right now, and I think the important thing is to, I do think that there should be an attempt made in these seasons to show the good of Tar-Meneldur and ultimately Arrendis's view that Numenor and the way the Numenoreans are is something good. They are good people. They are not, it's not just, here's the boring place we don't care about, and then here's the all the other things that Aldar. Now, it's a story about Aldarion, so we're not going to spend a lot of time on Numenor, but
it needs to be established.
But to be established that it isn't just that we're always on Aldarion's side. We have to see that he is, in fact, giving up something good, and that there was something that was right about Tar-Meneldur's view. Now, ultimately, what's interesting, I think, is that Tolkien is leading us to at least an alternate view that Aldarion is there to fulfill a purpose and grow Numenor into something greater, which then, of course, as is the wont of men, they take too far and ultimately corrupt. But they do serve a great purpose in saving Middle-earth from Sauron and supporting the elves. And so they needed to be great in order to do that. And they weren't going to be great under Tar-Meneldur. Like, Tar-Meneldur recognizes this when he gets the letter of Gil-galad. He recognizes that there's a wider world and he's only a small part and he's not the king for this moment. And so, you know, that's later on, of course. But
I wrote down as I finished this here and read through it again, I didn't really want to go through and re-edit it because I would have just been stuck here for hours trying to figure this out, because it was actually a whole lot of fun. There are two things I realized that I left out that need to be focused on more. One, relationship with the elves of Valinor. They come to his wedding, so there needs to be something there. And part of that, I think, is what you say, is like there is something good here in Numenor, and we can establish that through their relationship with those elves.
And what I really, and maybe this is just my secret Catholic coming through, what I would really love to do is use as an excuse to get into the worship of the Numenoreans.
My point number two. That was my second thing. Oh, it's like more nice. Focus on the Numenorean religion. Exactly. Go on. Yeah, exactly right.
So, you know, having, you know, showing their worship on the mountain and making it a thing, and even connecting it, as you said, with the elves of Valinor who would make infrequent visits probably to Numenor from Tol Eressëa. And so, yeah, there's that. And then the last thing I would also add in there is Aldarion's relationship with Winnin. So this is going to be something interesting, because in order to make Arrendis not seem like a crackpot when she's like raging about how he's basically treating the sea like another woman, I think it would be super useful to show a couple scenes from his youth, from Aldarion's youth, and then as he's on the ocean, like that he actually has a devotion or a kind of relationship with Winnin. He has reverence for her, and you know, she's the one with the situation with the Valar and their relationship with elves and their relationship with men. There's clearly going to be people that are more like, if you're Celebrimbor, Aule is your inspiration, right?
And so
for him, it's going to be Winnin, and so we can actually show him having a relationship. I'm not talking about anything but we can show him having this sort of devotion to Winnin, and she even watching over him at certain points. Like, he can meet Ase, like, not even necessarily in a sort of, you know, Hollywoodish moment, but he could be subject of Ase's wrath and have Winnin calm the waves, and you could do cool things in his voyages which show his devotion. And then it becomes a real thing. Like, now he's choosing between two women, basically. Although one is not in the same way, obviously.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a marital relationship with Winnin.
With Winnin. I could see that being introduced when he first meets Círdan too, because that Círdan of the seas, right?
Oh, I like that.
That's something where you sow those seeds and then it becomes more real, because Círdan would actually have met them as well. Right. Círdan would have, like, he's old enough, he would have been there. Like, I'm sure they revealed themselves to him.
And remember, Uinen has some kind of monument to her or something on the in Armenelos.
Yeah, yeah, in the prison.
Oh no! I don't mean
in the Rings of Power. It was in a prison.
I thought there was a reference to her being in the harbor somehow. Maybe I'm misremembering. There being a harbor reference to Uinen, when he leaves at one point. Anyway. I might be wrong, but anyway, it would just be cool to actually like have it be a thing where there is a sense in which it is another woman, and you don't have to make it lean into it too much, but Arendis will lean into it a lot because she actually calls it out specifically with the Uinen at one point, and so in Tolkien's text, so,
there is a small island called Tol Uinen. Off the coast of Numenor in the long narrow bay of Romena.
There we go. That it has to be the Numenoreans showing reverence. Now, I don't know if you could even, because he probably doesn't tell you the origin of Tol Uinen, it could even be called that because Aldarion like brings back the news from Círdan and he gets his devotion and his guild of venturers decide they're going to name it that and, bring it in front of the king and whatever.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Anyway,
I like that. I like that. All right, guys, we're going to do the last three seasons in our next episode. However, we'll have a week off. I will actually be out of town for like 10 days. And so we will take a week off. I'm so sorry. But we will be back with these final episodes and jump over to the extended edition with us, guys. Hey, you know what? Before we do, we're going to do something we haven't done in a very long time. And that's,
if you like Tolkien,
it's been a while because there hasn't been anything new that's come out. And if it has, it's just reprints and reduns. This is something that has never been done before. And that is the Letters of J.R.R. Tolkien as an audiobook. This was just released yesterday. And I downloaded it last night. I listened to about 45 minutes of it so far. It's done really well. It's the revised and expanded edition. It has two different readers, one voice for Tolkien and one voice for the footnotes and for the commentary within it. So it makes a nice separation between the two. It's a little weird hearing a ton of letters read to you. It's not like a story or anything like that, but it's kind of nice because if you just want to go through them, you can pick one up for 5 minutes and put it down and then come back a week later and pick it up for 10 minutes. Like you can get through all his letters this way without feeling like, oh man, I have just, I listened to a chapter last week and now it's 2 weeks later and I forgot what happened and I have to go back and re-listen to it. No, these are the letters. This isn't like there's a plot line through this here. So pick it up. It's good. I'll put a link in the, the show notes below. It's kind of worth it. Thankfully I had a credit here. Oh, that's Sarah. That's my wife's name up there. Sorry. But, I still have two credits available. And if you do this, right, check it out. I think you can get 3 months for free or 3 months for like $5 each. And every once in a while, the great thing is I'm going to tell you a secret about Audible. Audible gives you the ability like to cancel anytime. So, and then after a while you haven't re-upped, they'll send you a letter. Oftentimes that's like, hey, join again for 3 months for $15 and we'll give you 3 credits. I'm like, okay, I'll take 3 audiobooks for $5 each. And it's a great way to just keep filling out your library. So I have to pick two more books to read. I think I filled out all my Tolkien ones. I filled out a ton of C.S. Lewis ones. We'll see what I pick up next. But this is worth it. If you haven't gotten it, The Letters of J.R.R. Tolkien, it's 30 hours of his letters. If only the rest of us were that proficient with our letter writing.
Yeah.
And this is revised and expanded, so it's even more. But yeah, pick it up. So there you go, guys. Letters of J.R.R. Tolkien. That's awesome. All right. We're going to go into our expanded edition, just like J.R.R. Tolkien's letters of Exploring Tolkien, where we talk more about these first three seasons. And more about some of the questions from last week, too, from our members. Go to theonemember.com/member, become a member, become a sponsor, join us. Harrison, Adam, Lynn, and Rich, they're the awesome ones. And 6 new people, which I don't have in front of me, but maybe next time we'll read their names out because you guys are awesome. We really appreciate you. Join us there. Get on Discord. Click the link below if you just want to try out Discord for those free open channels. And we'll see you on the other side.
Bye-bye, freeloaders.